ETL Echo presents Somewhere, Sometime, a collaboration for September to Remember 2025, the Department of Magical Transportation. Story by Auralyn, artwork by Taylor Sketches, and audio by Wilfriede 0815. Rating, mature. No archive warnings apply. Summary. Post-war, Pansy just wants one thing out of life. The chance to travel. To get away from the monotony of the everyday grind. A job in the portkey office seems the perfect answer. There's just the fact that she has to share an office with Ron Weasley, of all people. Pansy starts her job at the portkey office on a dreary Monday morning. Her lips are painted scarlet, her pencil skirt tight under starched robes. From the desk next to her, Ron Weasley eyes her warily.
All right, he says,
which Pansy takes as some sort of greeting and not him actually asking after her welfare.
Weasley,
she replies primly, and out of her bag she produces a sheaf of parchment and a brand new quill. He watches as she places the paper carefully atop the wood and smooths down the edges. Pansy folds her hands in her lap, and then looks over to see Ron staring. Her glare is knife-sharp.
What?
His shrug is a languid roll of broad shoulders under a creased white shirt.
Nothing. Nice quill.
He stands, picking up a small bag off his desk.
Well, nice to catch up and all that, but I'm just off to Vienna.
The bag is upended, and a small toy soldier rolls out onto his open palm, and Ron disappears from the office as if he's been sucked into the fabric of the universe. Pansy blinks at the spot where he stood for a moment. Then she picks up her new quill, pulls the parchment towards herself, and starts her new job. As office mates go, Ron is generally quite easy to share with. He's laid back, sometimes too laid back, and he has this way of somehow managing to coax a smile out of even the grumpiest of co-workers. He may well be messy, leaving files strewn carelessly across his desk, and he's always muttering away to himself under his breath, but because he spends so much of his time zipping away to far-flung places, Pansy often gets the whole cubicle to herself. She's not going to complain about that. It's actually the least of her grievances with her new job. Pansy has always wanted to travel. Not the kind of travel that comes with a pre-planned itinerary or under the scrutiny of her mother's sharp gaze. Not the safe sort of summering in the French countryside, where days are filled with afternoon teas and light conversation in the orangerie. Pansy wants to see and experience real places, run around in the big wide world, in cities that don't speak her name or remember her face, walk into a room where no one expects her to sit straight, or smile politely, or defend a last name that feels more like a shackle with every breath. For years, she's been trapped in velvet parlors and rigid expectations, perfect posture, perfect silence, perfect pure blood. Yet there's always been something, in the back of her mind, niggling that there might be more for her to experience, if only she could find a way out. A job in the portkey office, Department of Magical Transportation, seemed the perfect answer. Her mother branded it humiliating, but Pansy saw it for the opportunity it presented. An excuse to leave. To vanish. For a little while, even if it was only for official business. As it turns out, official business is less traveling overseas and more arranging for other people to go and live out their dreams. Pansy has worked in the department for 6 months, and the furthest she's been is level 7 to deliver paperwork to games and sports. If she has to authorize one more portkey to Rome or Dubai or Halki Dicky without even getting to travel there herself, well, she might just scream. Pansy doesn't even need to look up anymore when she hears their office door bang open. There's a certain way Ron walks, a loping, slightly careless stride, like he's on his way somewhere but hasn't yet decided if it's worth rushing. He always carries too many scrolls, never ties them properly, and they fall haphazardly to his desk as he bundles into his chair.
Morning, he says, casually.
She doesn't look up.
You're late.
By 4 minutes.
4 minutes too late.
Didn't realize you were waiting for me. She hears the grin in his voice and finally looks up,
if only to glare. His hair is still damp, like he's just come from a shower, and his collar is crooked. There is a large smudge of ink on his right hand, and a half-eaten piece of toast in the other. "Rough morning?" he asks, gesturing at her ever-growing pile of paperwork.
"I don't see how that's any of your business," she says crisply.
He sighs and stretches out his legs, waving his wand to produce a shimmering itinerary that hovers over his head. Even from her own desk, Pansy spots the names of various destinations that she'd give her wand arm to visit. She looks away, knowing that envy is never something she's been able to hide very well.
"Looks like I'm off to Lisbon today," he announces around a mouthful of toast.
"Good for you,"
Pansy replies, unable to stop the bitterness from curling her words.
"You all right? You seem even more prickly than usual."
"I'm absolutely fine, Weasley, don't worry. Off you pop to Lisbon. I'll just be here, as always, authorizing more portkeys to places I'm not allowed to visit."
She firmly stamps "approved" down onto an application to punctuate her point. He raises his eyebrows at her sharpness.
"Okay, wow. You really did get up on the wrong side of the bed this morning."
She doesn't gratify him with a response, continuing to roughly stamp at the next file. But out of the corner of her eye, she sees him shake his head and then disappear in a swirl of color. Later, when she comes back from a meeting, there is a small paper bag waiting on her desk. Ron is back in his chair, feet kicked up on the desk, leafing through some paperwork balanced precariously on his lap. Pansy nudges the paper bag with her wand, confused.
"It won't bite," he says.
"What is it? Did you see who left it?"
"It's a pastel de nata," Ron replies, not even looking up from his work.
"A pastel de nata," she echoes. "From
Lisbon."
Her fingers still.
"You got me a pastel de nata?"
"From Lisbon,"
he says again, this time with a small chuckle.
"Why?
Why did I?"
He rolls his eyes, finally looking up.
"I don't know. Because you seemed annoyed this morning, and there was this place right next to the portkey point and..."
He shrugs, cheeks turning the slightest shade of pink.
"I had one spare, all right?"
"All right."
Pansy sits, sliding the delicate tart out of the bag.
"It's perfect."
"Thank you."
"It's fine," he mutters, waving her off and looking away. Ron continues his work, and Pansy pretends to do hers, but really, she can't stop glancing at the offering sitting atop the paper bag. A piece of the world, right there, in reach. It tastes like heaven. A week later, Pansy is just in the middle of another unrelenting pile of paperwork when in breezes the department head, Patrick Thistlethwaite. He's not alone, as Ron follows him through the door.
"Parkinson," Patrick calls, tossing a file down on her desk. "Congratulations, you've been promoted."
Pansy's head snaps up, her fingers tighten around her quill.
What?
"Weasley here needs a partner for portkey testing. You've made the least fuck-ups out of everyone recently, so, like I said, congratulations."
Pansy can do nothing more than stare at the pair of them. Ron looks vaguely amused, but then that seems to be his default expression.
"Testing?"
she asks.
"What does that involve?"
"There's a backlog of international destinations that need verifying. Landing accuracy, local time adjustment, that sort of thing."
Patrick nods at Ron.
"Weasley knows what he's doing, but it's protocol that testers work in pairs, just in case something goes awry."
Pansy blinks at him.
"Does that happen often?"
"Not very."
It's Ron that answers, tapping a clipboard impatiently against his leg.
"So I'd rather keep up that streak, if it's all the same to you."
Pansy resists an eye roll.
"Where are we going?"
she asks, heart fluttering in her chest at the possibility of travel. Suddenly, for the first time in years, the world is opening up to her. Ron glances at the clipboard and then hands it over the desk.
Scotland.
Scotland, Pansa replies flatly. Not exactly what she was hoping for. She'd spent enough time under a dull Scottish sky as a teenager. She was holding out for somewhere a little more exciting.
Ron peers down at her heeled boots and tight black dress. Do you have anything more suitable to wear? You're dressed like you're going to a ministry gala.
She smiles tightly. And you're dressed like you lost a bet.
He has his usual ink smudges on his fingers, mud on his boots, and zero patience in his expression. Suit yourself. Let's go.
Patrick holds out a small bag as Pansy scrambles to her feet, rounding her desk to stand next to Ron.
Take my arm, he says, and reluctantly she slides her hand through the crook of his elbow.
Patrick tips the open bag, and a champagne cork rolls out, landing in Ron's open palm. There is a hook in Pansy's abdomen, a sudden lurch as they are jolted away and thrown through time and space. Portkey travel is always unpleasant. The spin, the jolt, the nausea. And when her boots finally hit the muddy ground, Pansy braces herself, ready for the disorientation, the shiver of discomfort. But nothing prepares her for the icy temperature of the Scottish Highlands blasting in her face. Her robes whip around her legs as a gust of wind blasts through the moors, and she realizes far too late that she has landed directly in the middle of a puddle. The wet seeps through her designer boots immediately.
Merlin's beard, Pansy. Ron's voice cuts through the drizzle. Need to work on your landing.
She stands stiffly, rain lashing into her eyes. The cold, wet dirt is oddly grounding, in a way. A reminder that she's actually left the ministry.
It's only a puddle, she mutters, though she isn't entirely sure whether she meant it for him or herself.
Right, Ron laughs. A puddle that's practically up to your knees.
She finally looks at him. The grin tugging at the corner of his mouth is as ridiculous as his tousled hair, plastered against his forehead. His robes are sticking to his chest, and there are little puddles of water collecting at his feet. She scowls.
You're wet too, you know?
Yeah, but I didn't land in a puddle, he shoots back. And my boots are waterproof.
The wind tugs at her robes again, this time nearly lifting the hem and exposing the soggy cuffs of her boots.
So, what do we do now?
Ron gestures to the clipboard she grips in hand.
There's a checklist. Read it out, will you?
She does, holding on tight as the wind threatens to tear the clipboard right out of her grasp.
Landing accuracy?
Ron squints at a point in the grass, a little circle of stones.
About 20 feet off, but not bad.
Time sync?
He laps the enchanted watch strapped to his wrist.
Local time matches ministry calibration. Give or take a minute.
Environmental magic interference?
Ron raises his wand and mutters a few incantations. A small burst of harmless blue sparks fizzle into the air.
Minimal. We're supposed to stay at least 10 minutes in case of residual portkey distortion. If nothing goes wrong, we leave and file the report.
She stares at him for a moment.
That's it?
He shrugs, wiping his hands on his damp sleeves.
Seems like an awful lot of paperwork for a few minutes of standing around in the middle of nowhere. I know. Welcome to the glamorous life of a portkey tester.
The wind picks up again, carrying with it the scent of damp earth and rain-soaked heather. Pansy closes her eyes, inhaling deeply.
Okay, so it might not be the most exciting of destinations, and it might be for the briefest of trips, but this, the chill, the biting wind, the noise of the distant sheep bleating in the hills, this is the sort of place she can lose herself in, the starkness of it all. It's simple, no expectations. Even just for 10 sodden minutes, there will be no reminders of who she is or what she's supposed to be. Here, it doesn't matter that her family has been fractured by war, or that her social circles have been reduced to whispered gossip and glances. For a moment, it's just air, and space, and freedom.
Right, she says, trying to drag herself back to reality.
10 minutes.
Only 7 minutes left now, he replies, peering at the watch, his expression unbothered by the damp surroundings. He looks almost comfortable here, like he belongs in this dreary open expanse. For the briefest moment, Pansy wishes she could be this unflinching, to look at a grey, wet, and almost entirely forgotten place like this and feel at peace. Instead, the restlessness inside her stirs, the quiet, gnawing need to go somewhere, anywhere.
Do we have to stay right here?
You can step out of the puddle if you'd like.
You're hilarious.
Thanks.
I wasn't...
Pansy stops and sighs when she sees his wide grin.
Can I go for a walk?
You can do whatever you like for 6 more minutes. She takes a few steps, boots slipping slightly on the mud as she moves away from Ron. There's not really anywhere she can go, not in a few minutes and not when all they're surrounded by is wide open space. But she feels like she can't just be stationary, not when she's been begging for a chance to leave the office. She looks out at the rolling hills, the endless stretch of mist that blurs the line between land and sky, and feels the pull of it again, the longing to go, to escape, just for a moment. When she turns back around, Ron is watching her, blue eyes bright in the pallid light. He's rain-soaked, holding back shivers, his wand still glowing faintly from interference readings. She walks back towards him, and his eyes never leave her as she draws closer. You all right? He asks. There's a small crease in between his brows.
I'm fine, she says.
He doesn't look like he believes her, but he also doesn't ask. Okay, time's up. Let's go back. Their second job 2 days later takes them to Granada, the broken biro of a portkey landing them in a sun-drenched alcove of the Alhambra. Pansy focuses on the descent, ensuring she steps foot on Spanish soil smoothly. It's Ron who lands awkwardly this time, falling sideways with a yelp and scraping his elbow against a brick wall. He curses, and she's biting back a laugh when he turns to her.
Don't, he scowls, rubbing his arm. Don't even say a word.
Need to work on your landing,
she parrots in what she considers quite a decent impression of his deep voice. Ron doesn't look like he shares the sentiment, choosing to ignore her. The list, please. The clipboard is held up and Pansy starts the checklist.
Landing accuracy?
Bob on, actually. Ron glances at his watch. Same with the time sink. There's also only the slightest of blue sparks from his wand. All good. We just need a photo of the landing spot for the file, he confirms, leaning back against the wall and producing a magical camera from a bag slung over his shoulder. Pansy stands impatiently next to him, peering around the corner at the garden spread out in front of them as he takes the photo. She just wants a look, a brief glance so she knows what is out there.
10 minutes, right?
Yeah. Although, maybe we could stretch it a little. She looks at him in surprise.
Really?
He snorts. Don't sound so shocked. I'm not a stickler for the rules. You think I managed to get those tarts in 10 minutes? They walk around the white cobbled courtyard and then sit on a low wall, soaking in the glorious scenery. Usually, Pansy hates silence. She thrives in it when she's in control. Whispered orders, sly remarks, the perfectly timed barb. But silence without her command makes her uneasy. It makes her feel too exposed. But here, in this quiet, sitting alongside Ron, she can almost breathe. She can almost let go of the parts of her that have been suffocating for years.
Do you ever think about where you're going? She asks, the words slipping from her before she can stop them.
Ron turns towards her, raising an eyebrow. Just a quick walk and then back to the ministry.
No, I don't mean right now. I mean, like, the future. Do you ever wonder where you're headed? What you're doing with your life?
He shrugs, obviously surprised by the sudden shift in tone. Don't really think about it much. Life's a bit too unpredictable for that, isn't it?
I suppose it is, she says quietly, turning away from him and focusing on the cypress trees ahead. But I still think about it. The future, I mean. Ron's voice is softer now, almost thoughtful. Everyone wonders, I reckon. There's a beat of silence, and then Pansy announces, I used to think you were awful. Ron blinks. Thanks? You were always shouting and racing around. I thought Gryffindors were supposed to have at least a little poise. And you tried to get Buckbeak executed. You stuck your nose up at everyone who wasn't Slytherin. Oh, and you literally tried to hand my best mate over to a maniac. Pansy laughs before she can stop herself. It escapes her like a hiccup, unexpected and undignified. Ron looks thrilled. Was that a laugh I just heard? She composes her face instantly. It was a sneeze. You're hallucinating from heat exhaustion. He grins, boyish and smug and definitely irritating. I made Pansy Parkinson laugh. You have no proof. He pulls the camera out from his pocket, snapping a quick picture. Pansy tries to swipe it out of his hands, but he holds it aloft, eyes bright as it develops in his palm. I'm going to keep it on my desk. I'll set your desk on fire. Pansy shoves into his stomach with her elbow. His grin is never-ending. You're still terrifying. And you're still loud. They sit in silence, watching the sun begin to dip behind red stone and distant trees. I hate that I'm enjoying this, she mutters. He leans back on his hands, still smiling. Me too. Every few days there's a new destination, an unseen place for Pansy to drink in. Some are far-flung. Wellington, Phoenix, Sri Lanka. Others are closer to home. Marseille, Cardiff, even Ipswich. Their stays last longer. 10 minutes stretch to 20, stretch to 30. A buttery croissant in Paris, a quick dip of the toe in an icy Norwegian fjord. They push the limits of their job description over and over again. She starts a journal, just a small jotter where she notes down where they've been and what they've done. Ron notices, of course. They're crossing the Charles Bridge, feet dragging their supposed time limit to new extremes, when he finally asks, Why do you keep that notebook? Because she doesn't trust her memory. Because good moments slip through her fingers faster than bad ones. Because sometimes, if she doesn't write something down, she isn't sure it's happened at all. I want to remember things, she says after a beat of silence that lays heavy in the sticky evening air. The good stuff. He doesn't press her, not when he too grew up surrounded by war. If you could pick anywhere to visit, he says, when they reach the other end of the bridge, where would you go? Pansy watches the rush of people passing them by. Somewhere with a view, she says, where it feels like I can see the whole world. He's fumbling with the portkey packet, pulling it out of his pocket and nearly pitching it off the side of the bridge. When he looks at her, his expression is thoughtful, and then he's tugging her sleeve to shelter them away from prying eyes. Ready? Normally she hooks her arm through his elbow when they travel, but this time his hand moves from her sleeve, down, and grips her own. His palm is warm, and she glances down at their joined hands. Ready, she says, and Ron reaches into the bag and pulls out the portkey. It's easy to fall into their own rhythm. In some ways, it feels like they've always been this way, when in reality, they grew up not really knowing each other at all. Ron has become a quiet crack in the armor Pansy spent years perfecting, someone she actually looks forward to seeing every day. When they'd been thrown together in the portkey office, Pansy had assumed she'd tolerate him at best. He's a Weasley, after all. He's everything she had been trained to disdain. Too Gryffindor, too easygoing, too much of everything that had been the antithesis of her carefully constructed world. There is something strangely magnetic about him. Something that grates on her nerves in ways she can't explain. Not in the way her family irritates her, with their suffocating expectations, but in a way that leaves her feeling off balance. It's in the way he's perpetually grinning at her, or how his expression seems to have a terrifying tint of fondness. How sometimes she catches him staring at her when they're checking landing points or magical interference. He's been making what he must think are covered eyes at her all morning, little glances from his desk as they silently fill in paperwork from their last portkey. She's been ignoring him until now, when his voice carries over the silence.
You all right?
The question lands softly. No agenda, just a question. It isn't that people never ask how she is. They do, occasionally, but usually with polite concern and the expectation that she'll say fine and move on. But Ron always asks like he means it, like he wants to know the real answer.
I'm...
She hesitates, just long enough to betray herself.
Fine.
Right. He doesn't push. He never does. She wants him to. No, she doesn't. Merlin, she doesn't know what she wants.
Struggling with a day at your desk?
He leans back in his chair, smile tugging at the corner of his mouth.
You're spoiled with travel now.
Struggling listening to your heavy breathing, more like.
Her smile back is the sweetest she can muster. He raises an eyebrow and pulls out one of the small portkey bags from the top drawer of his desk, which he waves in the air.
You won't be wanting to take a break with me then?
I thought we didn't have any sites to check for a few days.
We don't. This one is purely recreational.
Where will it take us?
He shakes his head slowly. Nope, not telling. You're either coming or not.
She narrows her eyes at him. What is he playing at? He just continues to watch her expectantly, but his knowing look says he can predict exactly what it is she'll do.
Fine, I'm in.
She stands up to grab at her outer robes, but he stops her with a shake of the head.
You won't need those where we're going.
He's shrugging out of his own robes, fingers moving to the cuff of his shirt sleeve so that he can roll them to the elbow.
Come on.
He reaches for her, and she steps towards him too easily. Maybe she should have put up a little resistance, just for appearance's sake. Her fingers twine in his, and she touches the pearlescent marble in his palm. They land awkwardly, stumbling against each other. Ron holds her steady with a hand at her hip, and Pansy grips onto his shoulders tightly. She's hit by a wave of heat, golden threads of sunlight instantly warming her face.
Wow, definitely didn't need the ropes then.
When she steps away from him and turns to see where they are, she's actually speechless. They're impossibly high, standing at the edge of a cliff, nothing but a low wall at waist height. Below them is the most spectacular of vistas that seems to stretch to the edge of the world. Sea, sky, forest, beaches curving like golden crescents in the fiery orange sunrise. They're so high that whispers of clouds drift lazily past, cloaking them in a soft, ethereal veil. Pansy turns to gape at Ron, but he's half-turned, head tilted back, and when she follows his gaze, it lands on the towering figure looming behind them. Limbed in peach light, the statue's arms are outstretched, as if it's embracing the entire world.
So?
His grin is pearly and bright, hair flaming in the light.
You wanted the whole world, right?
This...
Her mouth closes. Opens. Pansy blows a breath out through her teeth that she hopes somehow conveys how utterly bowled over she is.
I actually have no words.
Pansy Parkinson struck mute.
Ron clutches a hand to his heart as if in shock.
Merlin, I must really have done well then, because...
But she doesn't hear the rest of the sentence, because she's reaching out, winding a fist into his shirt and pulling him towards her. She cuts him off by pressing her mouth hard against his. Ron makes a muffled sound of surprise, but his hands automatically move to her hips, gripping her firmly as they stumble slightly on their feet. Pansy kisses him forcefully, smoothing her other hand up his chest, where she can feel the rapid thump of his heartbeat underneath white cotton. It's Ron who pulls back suddenly, eyes searching her face for an answer that he ultimately must find, as he quickly yanks her back towards him. He tilts her head with a hand at her jaw, bending her to his will, taking control of the kiss. Their mouths open and it deepens, slow and unhurried up in the clouds. Pansy's not sure how long they stay like that, pressed close, but there's the unwelcome sound of tourists arriving that sees them reluctantly break apart. She turns and grips the stone wall, trying to ground herself before she melts right over the cliff edge. She's too warm, too flustered, to be able to blame it wholly on early morning South American sunshine.
So,
Ron clears his throat, eyes trained on the forward view. When he speaks, his voice is scratchy, and her stomach flips at the sound, at the fact that she did that to him.
I take it that means you like the view.
Pansy laughs. It's beautiful. You did very well.
And that kiss was...
She hesitates. What was it? She's not sure she's quite ready to admit what she already knows deep down. He's burrowed his way in, slowly, slowly but surely.
A thank you, I guess.
Ron gives a small laugh.
If that's how you thank all your friends.
Oh, we're friends, are we?
She likes this, the teasing, the flirting. Can handle this, keeping things simple. Innocent. Well, kind of innocent. She turns to the view again.
I can't actually believe it. I wish I had the camera.
Oh. Ron pats down at the sides of his trousers, pulling out the shrunken camera they normally take on their work trips. With a quick wave of his wand, it's back to normal size, and he passes it over. Pansy snaps a few photos, taking in the panoramic view, reveling in the fact that she is here. When she sweeps the camera round to the left, Ron is standing in her viewpoint. Click. She takes a picture of him gazing out at the view, his own sense of awe clear on his freckled face. They stay up there for a while, until the number of tourists is too much to bear. Ron whispers a notice-me-not charm over them, pulling out the small marble so that they can portkey back to the office. Later that evening, inside her small Clapham flat, Pansy takes out the memory book she's been keeping about their trips. On the next clean page, she sticks down the picture of Ron looking out at a spectacular view. Rio, she writes as the title. Normally, she adds a few sentences about what they did, what they saw. Her quill hovers above the page, unsure for a moment. Then, she adds just one singular word. Ron. It's Pansy who bawls into the office late the next morning, clutching her bag and some paperwork to her chest. Ron is sitting on his desk, chomping on a piece of toast. He taps his watch with a grin.
7 minutes?
Pansy ignores him, tossing her things down and snatching up the itinerary from his desk.
Where are we going today?
The answer is Switzerland, where the portkey lands them in a verdant field. The air is crisp, the sky cornflower blue, and Pansy shields her eyes with her hand as she looks at the Alps looming in the distance.
We were actually meant to land in there,
Ron says, gesturing towards a small stone building in the distance.
The accuracy is way off. We'll need to recalibrate.
They stride over to the building, and Ron pulls out his wand to tease apart the threads of magic. He has them sorted in no time, and once Pansy snapped the requisite picture, he turns to look at her.
10 minutes, he says, and there's a wicked glint in his eye. What should we do?
Someone must have moved first, but Pansy has no idea who. 1 minute they're staring at each other, the next her back is flat against the cool stone wall of the building, Ron's mouth sliding desperately against hers. She can't help but slide her palms up his broad chest, gripping at the fabric to pull him impossibly closer.
Pansy,
he breathes against her lips, but she doesn't let him pull back, keeping her hands fisted in his shirt.
Shut up, Weasley.
He does, surging into her, grasping a firm hand around the outside of one of her thighs. It's hitched against him, pushing her back against the brick, bodies perfectly aligning so that she can feel the hard length of him under the starched fabric of his trousers.
8 minutes, he grins,
but it's wiped from his face as Pansy grinds herself against him. It turns out they only need 7. The delicious feel of him, just there. His fingers press between her legs and she's clutching at him, head thrown back as his mouth forges a path up her throat. There are stars in her eyes, alpine breeze whipping her hair around her face, and they're moving against each other in a race to the finish. Ron lets out a long, shuddery breath that's punctuated by her name.
Merlin, I haven't come in my trousers like a teenager since, well, since I was a teenager.
She can't help it. She laughs, and it catches him by surprise, but then he's grinning, warm and bright, joining her in chuckling as they slowly extract themselves from each other. A quick cleaning spell leaves them almost presentable.
30 seconds, Ron says, checking his watch.
Since when have we ever cared about the time? Pansy replies, and kisses him for 40. Their trips after that are a race against the clock. How fast can they tick off the portkey testing and lose themselves in each other? It turns out, rather quickly. First is Warsaw, where Pansy drags Ron around the side of a dilapidated clothing store. He pushes her back against a brick and kisses her until her knees are weak and lips sore. Next, the back room of a tiny taverna in Crete. Pansy sinks to her knees, and Ron bites back his gasps as she frees him from his trousers. There's a warm breeze, the sound of Yamas echoing around them. Ron cradles her jaw, whispering her name into the ether. Finally, the edge of the Black Forest. They stumble into the undergrowth, laughing as their robes are snagged by various pine branches. A clearing opens up and they sink to the grass, Ron tugging Pansy atop his thighs.
This seems a little more than friendly, he says,
and when they return to the ministry, there's grass stains on their clothes and dirt streaked on Ron's cheek. Normally, when they land back in the office, they're straight back into the ministry versions of themselves, just 2 colleagues working side by side, line firmly drawn. This time, Ron snags her sleeve as she makes her way back to her desk. Pansy. She looks at him, and then down to where his fingers circle her wrist. When her eyes meet his again, he looks pink-cheeked and nervous.
I was thinking, we should go out for a drink.
She blinks at him.
A drink? Yeah.
He drops her wrist, pushing his hands in his pockets. She frowns.
Like a date?
Ron rubs the back of his neck.
Yeah, sure. A date.
Pansy pauses, letting the silence stretch just long enough to give herself time to pull on the armor. Her eyes narrow cautiously.
We don't really do drinks, do we?
She says, voice cool, smooth as glass.
That's not part of the arrangement.
He gives a quiet scoff. Arrangement? I didn't realize we had an arrangement. I just thought... He shrugs.
You might want to, you know, hang out, talk, outside of work.
The look in his eyes is too honest, too sincere. She has to avert her gaze, concentrate on the peeling paint on the wall behind his head.
Why on earth would I want to go and talk?
She used to be so good at this, at protecting herself by giving others the brush off, by closing herself off to those that she knew had the ability to hurt her. And somehow, over the last few weeks, Ron Weasley has come to be in possession of that ability. But right now, with that look on his face, it's leaving a pit in her stomach.
Look, Ron, we're friends, aren't we? What we do... It's just a portkey thing.
Just a portkey thing, he echoes, and she notices how his jaw tightens slightly, how he gives a little nod of the head to himself.
Right, of course.
Okay, she says, offering a small smile.
I'm glad you agree. I'll see you tomorrow, yeah?
She doesn't wait for him to answer, turning on her heel and leaving. The weekend means it is 2 days until Pansy sees Ron again. She prepares herself before walking into the office, ready to absorb what she's sure will be the full force of Ron's sulk. shoulders back, standing tall, an impenetrable fortress. She pulls open the door.
Pansy,
he greets her with a bright smile, stopping her straight in her tracks.
New boots?
New... what?
I like them. Bit intimidating. Very you. Looks like you could probably stand in a very deep puddle with those.
Her shoulders wilt. Right. So this is how he wants to play this. She sighs, choosing to ignore his obvious faux casualness.
Anywhere today?
Need to head back to Lisbon. The landing area has been compromised. The Lisbon air is warm when they land, heavy and thick in the midday sun. Straight away, Pansy notices what is wrong. They've landed in the middle of a building site. Luckily, Ron has swished a notice-me-not charm over them, and they're back to slink off to the side of a whitewashed chapel without being spotted.
I'll do the recalibration. You take the pictures.
Ron hands her the camera and begins the work without preamble, wand weaving golden threads of magic in the air. Pansy watches him quite openly, the itch to say something about his supposedly normal behavior almost too much to bear. Ron finishes up rather quickly, and Pansy holds her breath. This is the part where they'd normally waste time before heading back, where Ron would press her back against a wall and make her lose all sense of time and place. Instead, he pulls out the portkey bag.
Right, let's go back.
Wait, Pansy says, before she can stop herself. The word hangs between them, Ron looking at her curiously.
You don't have to pretend like this is all normal.
Two friendly colleagues like us calibrating portkey sites is perfectly normal. His words are curled with a hint of bitterness as he looks away. She bites her lip at the friendly mention.
You know what I mean.
I'm fine, Pansy, he sighs. You said just friends, so that's what we'll be, right? Just friends.
Are we?
She says, because this certainly doesn't seem very friendly. It feels like there's a thunderstorm over them, ready to burst.
Absolutely.
He finally meets her eye, expression softening slightly. Look, before we go back, there is something I need to do. He's off before she can say anything, disappearing with a quiet crack of apparition, and Pansy leans against the wall of the chapel, drained. It takes 10 minutes before he's back, red-faced, like he's been hurrying about. Back at the office, she excuses herself and goes for a long lunchtime walk, unable to stand the awkwardness any longer. The tight-lipped efficiency from Ron felt so unnatural, so unlike him. She didn't think his wary tone would affect her quite so much. When she gets back to her desk, Ron is nowhere to be seen, but there is a small white paper bag sitting on top of her pile of paperwork. Pansy frowns, picking it up, turning it carefully in her hands. Inside is a pastel de nata. Pansy slumps into her chair.
Fuck.
Pansy is slow to admit when she's made a mistake, and it turns out telling Ron that she just wanted to be friends was a rather large one. The sky is a deep velvet black by the time she decides what to do. Standing on Ron's doorstep, she gives herself an internal pep talk and then hammers hard on the blue wood with a closed fist.
Blimey, Ron says, yanking open the door.
His hair is in disarray, casual t-shirt and joggers all rumpled, like he just jumped straight out of bed.
What is the emergency?
You bought me a pastel de nata.
It's obviously not what Ron thought she'd say, as he blinks in confusion before nodding slowly.
Yeah.
Why?
He shrugs, hands still on the doorframe.
Moment of madness, probably.
You like me, Pansy states.
Unfortunately.
I like you too.
His eyebrows raise.
I know, as friends.
No, Ron, not as friends.
Fine, secret portkey hookup buddies then.
Not just as them either.
He huffs out a short breath. What are you trying to say, Pansy?
Look, will you come with me?
She holds up a small bag. I have a portkey.
Where to?
Well, that would be telling.
He looks at her cautiously, like he's certain she's about to turn back into her bristly best, and then runs a hand through his hair, sighing deeply.
Merlin, yes, fine.
She reaches out, taking his arm, and he steps out onto the front step in front of her. He's tall, and close in how he looms over her. There's a prickle of heat at the back of her neck.
Okay,
she says, and she slides her arms around his middle, emptying the bag behind him. His mouth quirks into a small smile as he puts an arm around her shoulders.
Let's go.
They lurch through Technicolor, landing smoothly in their destination in a split second. Ron glances around, looking very confused.
Pansy, I hate to tell you this, but I think you might have picked up the wrong portkey.
She smiles, unclasping her arms from around him.
No, this is the right one.
Pansy, he says flatly, we're at work.
They are standing in the middle of their office in the portkey department, Ministry of Magic, right between their messy but unoccupied desks.
We are. This is exactly where I wanted to take you.
You wanted to bring me to work. You could have just waited until the morning, Ron replies.
I could have, Pansy says. But then I don't think I'm allowed to kiss you during work hours.
His grin is quick to be revealed.
It's not stopped you before.
Well, I've decided it's not going to happen anymore. No more kissing on government-mandated time.
His face falls flat once more. You've lost me again. She takes his hand, warm in her own.
Ron, I want to kiss you, okay? Not just sneakily on work trips when we're not supposed to, but all the time, here in the office and...
Pansy's unceremoniously cut off by Ron pressing his lips solidly against hers. She plants her hands on his chest, dragging her mouth away.
You didn't let me finish.
I don't care, he murmurs, trying to move back in. You said you wanted to kiss me.
She rolls her eyes.
For Merlin's sake, wait. I need to tell you that, yes, I like exploring the world with you, but actually what I want is for us to be together right here in London. And not just as friends, Ron. More than friends.
His eyes are mirth-filled as he gives her a cocky grin.
I knew it.
Oh, shush. No one likes a brag.
She pushes her hair back out of her face and clears her throat.
Okay, you can kiss me now.
Ron steps forwards, gathering her close against him. One hand frames her jaw, the other encircles her hip, and he kisses her, soft and slow, time and time again. The end.